number one sports site in the world.
Live from the Quick and Wound studios of the Yahoo Sports Radio headquarters. Nighttime. This is the right time.
You're on the nighttime now.
It's Tony D on Yahoo Sports Radio.
Well, if you had told the Oklahoma City Thunder before this playoff series, hey, you're going to get a split in Oakland, they would have taken it 99.9 times out of 10. Maybe there would have been the slight less than 1% chance that they would have said, no, we want both games in Oakland. But realistically, they would have wanted the split. That being said, they did get the split. But you got a feeling tonight that things have turned in this series. That third quarter in particular, where Steph Curry took over the game and the Golden State Warriors run away to a 27-point victory in Game 2. Now, Oklahoma City gets to answer in Game 3 at home, and we all know that a series never really begins until at least the home team plays a game, everybody plays a home game. So the Thunder have a chance to really answer this at home on Sunday. But watching tonight, the resiliency of the Golden State Warriors, which has been on display all season long, was really impressive. They looked trapped in Game 1. They looked like they were a team that was befuddled at times, why they were taking bad shots and missing all the shots, and why Russell Westbrook and Kevin Durant were able to claw back into a game on the road when they were down 14 points to win. But this time, they were able to get out to a lead early, saw Oklahoma City come back in that game, actually take a lead, and with about, I don't know, a minute left to go in the second quarter, they turn a one-point deficit into an eight-point halftime lead and then bombed them from there in the third quarter, led by Curry, who just kept shooting and shooting and shooting. Basically, Golden State became Golden State. Now, the Thunder did get a split. And if you want to look at the larger picture, they should still feel that they've accomplished something in this series. But if you're like me and you watch this game tonight, did you get the feeling that things were kind of turning? I don't know what to make of this series now because I still believe in Oklahoma City and I still believe in their talent. And look, sometimes games get away from you. Live to fight another day, if you know what I'm saying. The Thunder played in the third quarter and in most of the fourth quarter, as if, let's just end this thing. Let's get through this. So the final score really isn't indicative of the emphasis that the Thunder put into the game. But nevertheless, the Warriors rolled tonight. There were a couple of observations. One, I think the Warriors getting some really strong bench help tonight really showed what they can do when other guys participate in this game. Maurice Spates or Festus Ezeli coming off the bench, combined for 25 points, showing size. The Warriors out-rebounded the Thunder, and the Thunder aren't going to win this series if they don't win the rebounding edge. They've got to do that. The Thunder did it in Game 1. They did not do it in Game 2. So the Warriors were able to get the rebounds that they needed and basically change it up a little bit from the Game 1 and pulled away with a 27-point win. Steph Curry going into the crowd. Look, I love these kind of plays, right? They always talk about, it's hustle, man. Great hustle. God, I always get worried and scared when I see a player go into the crowd. But the thing that made Curry's crowd dive so interesting was that nobody was there to catch him. People of Oakland, you've got to catch your star when he's diving into the crowd. You've got to hold him up. He's not supposed to crash to the floor. If your star player is diving into the crowd, sacrifice body. Sacrifice your pride. Stand in his way. You'll be fine. My God, you might even get an autographed basketball if you have to go to the hospital, but don't let Curry fall to the ground amidst the chairs and the concrete and the spilt soda and popcorn. Get him up. Keep him up. That Steph Curry should have floated on a cloud when he landed into the crowd. They should, like a mosh pit. He should have landed and everybody should have hoisted him up. Oh, he should have never touched the ground. Instead, Warrior fans in that area act like they saw a spider. Like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God, ah! Crash. Hold him up. He's your NBA. He's your ticket to the finals. He's your ticket to another championship. Hey, listen, I'll break my arm to break his fall if I'm a Golden State Warriors fan. I don't know why anybody didn't. You've got to step in front of him. 800-777-2907, the number to join us tonight to talk about this game, the Eastern Conference as well. If you want to get your thoughts in on the Cavaliers rolling through that. You know, the Cleveland Cavaliers, let me take this back a little bit to my youth. Back in 1983, the Philadelphia 76ers had acquired Moses Malone. And Moses famously said of the Sixers, who had a phenomenal year, said about their run to a title that they would go faux, 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 which meant four games en route to winning the NBA championship. They lost one game in the playoffs en route to that title. They swept the Lakers in the NBA championship in 83. And that was just one of the more perfect teams that we had in the 80s, the 86 Philadelphia 76ers. LeBron and the Cavaliers are likely going in that direction till they get to the finals. Now, they may not win the championship, and they're definitely not going to win it in four. I don't care who they play, the Thunder or the Warriors. That game, that series is going to be hard fought. But up until that point, Cleveland is going to play 12 games in the NBA playoffs before the finals. And with all of the time that the NBA gives you to rest, recoup, rethink, strategize during an NBA series. We talked about this all the time. The NBA will play game one on a Tuesday, and they won't play game two until like Friday night. And then game three will be on Sunday, and then game four will be Tuesday. And you get a lot of space, especially early when they want to give television exposure to just about everybody in the postseason. So they have to do that to sort of spread out the television love. Now, not so much. I mean, the Golden State-Oklahoma series will have Game 3 on Sunday. I mean, that's a good chunk of time. But for the most part, you tighten up your schedule as the further you go along when there's less teams to sort of share the television exposure. But nevertheless, there's a lot of time. Since the NBA playoffs started in mid-April, the Cleveland Cavaliers have only played 9 games since in about a month. More than that. I mean, the playoffs started, I don't know, 14th or 15th. This will be LeBron's 10th game in the postseason. That's exactly the way he's wanted it. If there's one person who understands mileage, who understands workload, it's LeBron. If you think about it, in the last 6 years, who's played more games than LeBron James? Who's played more minutes than LeBron James? He will be going to his 6th straight finals. 6 straight. That's almost 2 presidential terms. That's remarkable. And he understands mileage better than anybody else. Think about how fresh the Cleveland Cavaliers are as they head into game 2, game 3, game 4 of this overmatched series with Toronto. I mean, they're going to win by double digits. I'd love to come on the air and go, well, anything can happen. And, you know, one of the great things about these series is that you never know when things will get, you know, change up. No, the Cleveland Cavaliers are better in every possible way. This is the example of on paper translating exactly to what you see on the court. And the Cavaliers are rested. Whoever comes out of this series between the Thunder and the Warriors, they're going to be a little tired and they're going to be a little beat up. This is not going to be Golden State has now found their mojo and now they'll win the next 3 games to get this series over with in 5. No. The Thunder are expected to come back in this series. The Thunder are expected to hold home court a bit. They may not win both games at home, but they're expected to at least get one. This is supposed to go down to the wire. So the Eastern Conference lacks excitement. It's rather boring. But you know what it does have? The one thing it has is it has anticipation, and it has a lot of speculation as well. This team is healthy. This team is on fire. LeBron doesn't have to do all the work. He's finally got the team that he wanted. Kevin Love is not with a broken shoulder, and Kyrie Irving is not hobbling around on crutches. They are healthy, and they are rested. So that's your NBA playoffs as we stand right now. Coming up next, the draft. Philadelphia has the number one pick, and reports are that they want Ben Simmons. That's not a surprise. Simmons wants Los Angeles. That's not a surprise. Could a surprise, though, be in the works and on a power play? That's next, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the third shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
All right, thanks for joining us here on Yahoo Sports Radio, taking you through the night tonight. I am Tony D. Our telephone number, 800-777-2907. We're talking a lot about the NBA playoffs, especially Golden State. With their victory over Oklahoma City, evening up the series at 1, and LeBron and the Cavaliers are just going to finish off Toronto whenever the heck that game gets to its fourth and final game of the series. The NBA draft lottery was Tuesday night, and in case you were not paying attention, it didn't really have any drama or excitement. The Philadelphia 76ers were expected to get the number one pick. They had a 25% chance of landing it. The ping pong balls came out. They did get the number one pick. And the Lakers got the number two pick. And it's a big deal for the Lakers because they need, you know, they got to keep that pick. And they're going to have a cornerstone, another cornerstone guy for their rebuilding project. The Sixers don't get that same kind of luxury, or at least from the public perception. See, the Lakers have the number two pick, and whoever they get, whether it's Brandon Ingram or Ben Simmons, this should be exciting for Laker fans because they put up with some bad years. They got Kobe's dollars off the books. They have $60 million to spend. They'll go after some free agents. But this is when the rebuilding starts. This is when things should start turning around for the Lakers. Sixer fans, you have no idea what they're going to do with the number one pick. Take him, trade him, he'll get hurt. The team will try to package a deal to dump half their staff. Who knows what the Sixers want to do? They're a mess, and they don't look like they're going to be put in the right direction, even when the Colangelos are there. You just don't know with the Sixers. And that's no fault of the fans. That's really the fault in the history of Philadelphia. They may turn it around. They may have a plan in place to turn it around, but do you trust it? I mean, I don't even trust the Lakers, but I trust them better than I do Philadelphia. Okay, so it doesn't look like it's a great place to go. It doesn't look like it's a great place to be a player in the NBA. And Ben Simmons would rather be a Laker. He's working on his shoe deal and then wants to make sure he's a Laker. So the Philadelphia 76ers, there are reports that they like Ben Simmons. Okay. And between the two guys, you could make an argument for either one of them. I don't think you're wrong necessarily if you like one or the other. It depends on your style. It depends on what you see out of each individual player. All right, so they like Ben Simmons. But Ben Simmons doesn't like them back. So if you're Ben Simmons, and let me just ask this. You have a chance to be the number one overall pick in the draft. That's a pretty high status. Now, it's not really, you're not going to break the bank over the guy who's the number two overall pick. But when you're the number one overall pick, that's historic. You're not a number two or three guy. You're a one guy. And you're forever known as a one guy. The number one overall pick kind of sounds nice when you say it. Better than the second overall pick, even if second overall picks have done really well in the past. Heck, third round picks have done really well in the past. You know, third overall picks have done well in the past. So Simmons could have that label, but in order to have that label, he has to be a Philadelphia 76er. Huh, but he doesn't want to be a Philadelphia 76er. So my question tonight is, and think about this, if you're Ben Simmons, do you power play this? Do you tell Philadelphia, I'm not playing for you? And the Sixers could say, oh, yes, you are. And he could say, no, I'm not. I'll go play in Australia. You'll get my NBA rights. Keep them, do whatever you want with them, trade them. I don't care. I ain't coming. And to any other team, I ain't coming. If you're Philadelphia, would you then say, that's too risky? We don't want to look bad. We don't want that kind of fight. Or do you trust that in the end, the kid wants to play in the NBA? He went to college and walked through it for a year so he could play in the NBA. All the money is in the NBA. He could go to Australia and make a good, decent living, but ain't it the NBA? Or do you say, no, we can't do it. We got to take Brandon Ingram because we don't want to get involved in a bad public negotiation pull where a guy is openly admitting that he doesn't like our organization or trust it enough to win or do right by him, and his desire is to play in Los Angeles, so let the Lakers have him. It's an interesting conundrum because we've seen this play out before in sports. We all remember Eli Manning holding up that Charger jersey with that face. Oh, God, I told him I wasn't going to play here. And he became a New York Giant. If you go back to the late 90s, Eric Lindros pulled this off in hockey. Lindros was a highly touted player coming into the NHL. The Quebec Nordiques were going to draft him. And he said, oh, no, I'm not going to play there. And they said, oh, no, you will. He said, no, I'm not. I will not play there. Oh, no, you will. No, I won't. And so they traded him. And some of the players really helped the Quebec Nordiques, who later became the Colorado Avalanche, win a Stanley Cup in 1996. But we've seen this play out before. John Elway was drafted and didn't want to become a Colt. Was a Bronco, was going to threaten to go to baseball. We've seen guys do this. This is not new. This wouldn't be new. But in Ben Simmons' case, it would be interesting because he does have a good option. He can go back home to Australia where he's got a little bit of a hero status. He can go play there for a little bit, make decent money, and then get to the NBA in a couple of years. He's young enough. I think it's interesting. Because I love the draft and I love the theory behind it, but I do understand that what the draft is an organization that dictates to people where they're going to live and where they're going to work without any sort of input from the guys that want to be employees there. And that rarely happens in any other industry. You know, if you want to work for certain companies, you may be sent to different locations around the country. You say, look, you want to work for an oil and gas company? We may send you to North Dakota. We may send you to Texas. We may send you to Alaska. We may send you to other places where we have offices. Heck, we may even send you internationally. But in the end, you can go work for another oil and gas company if the conditions were right. Let's say you work for company A and they say, well, we can put you in any place in the country, anywhere in the world. Company B that does the exact same thing that you could use your services for, say, no, you want to live in Texas, you can live in Texas. Players in the NFL, NBA, Major League Baseball, they don't have that option. Where are you going to go to play professional basketball in the United States for the kind of money the NBA has? You can't. It's either the NBA or, I don't know, somewhere around the world. But there is leverage because of that. The Sixers want a player. The Sixers want a number one overall player on their roster. At least you think they do, right? Lord knows their track record isn't all that good. But they want a number one player to contribute to their team. What if they make that selection and that guy doesn't come there to contribute for his team? Then they have wasted a pick while they sit on rights that are basically useless. Because the last time I checked, a piece of paper that has rights written all over it didn't score 22 points a night. Didn't pull down 12 rebounds a night. No, the piece of paper just sits while you go out and lose more games. So the Sixers don't want to play that game of chicken if it does mean he goes somewhere else to play because they want that pick to have value. You don't get the number one pick very often. You're not supposed to, Cleveland Cavaliers. You're not supposed to. So the Sixers have it, and they'd like it to carry some weight. Having a guy go, I'll go to Australia to play because I want to play for the Lakers and not you, doesn't carry much weight. This could be interesting. I'm just speculating, but it could be interesting. For all I know, Simmons could be a Philly guy anyway. There is a coach on the team that worked with his dad. But watch this one because it could be fun. I'm Tony D. We'll talk to Lang Green next.
Tony D. On the third shift,
it's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
Tony D here on the Nighttime on Yahoo Sports Radio as we continue to look back on what went on in Oakland in Game 2 of the Western Conference Finals as Golden State beat Oklahoma City 118-91, a 27-point victory. And that series is now tied up at 1. Lang Green joins us, BasketballInsiders.com, to talk about that, the Eastern Conference, and everything else NBA. How are you, my friend?
What's going on, Tony? Thanks for having me on.
All good, as always, as always. All right, so this Game 2, it's a different Golden State team. They came out with more authority. They came out with more energy and more excitement. This series is now even, but if you're Oklahoma City, even though you get throttled in Game 2, is there still a sense of confidence that you did what you had to do in these first two games?
I tell you what, I still think there's a sense of confidence, Tony, but at the same time, when you get thumped by 25-plus points, it does put a little bit of doubt in your mind because you got to remember, the Thunder entered this series as an underdog, a huge underdog. They pulled out a win down the stretch, a game that some people thought they should have lost. Then they come back in Game 2. They get smoked by 25. The doubt will be there, but at least they're going home to get some of that home cooking.
All right, this game again with Golden State, did what we saw in the later part of the second half and then all of the third quarter, is it just Golden State being Golden State? What did they do right to sort of get rid of the Thunder in this game?
Well, first and foremost, this is what makes Golden State so great. It's kind of like when you watch a Floyd Mayweather fight. A fighter might have success in the first round and second round, but once they get your rhythm down, the Golden State Warriors will put you in the trunk. And that's what we saw tonight against the Thunder. They, you know, the first game, they were up 12. The Thunder made some adjustments. Russell Westbrook got hot. But this game here, they really put the brakes on them at the beginning of that quarter and anytime thing. And this is why the Golden State Warriors, such a great team, they rarely lose two games in a row because they find what you're doing, they find a way to nullify it, and they don't ever lose confidence in their game, Tony.
The rebounding edge in this one went to Golden State. If Oklahoma City is going to win this series, they have to get that back, correct?
They have to get it back. And I'm looking at a guy like Serge Ibaka tonight. He had 8 boards, but 3 points in 30 minutes. That's not going to get it done. If you told me entering the playoffs that Serge Ibaka would not be the Oklahoma City Thunder's best big man down low, I would say, well, maybe it's in his cancer, but it's been Steven Adams bringing all of the energy. Something's going to have to give with Serge Ibaka. He's a guy that just a few years ago, everyone thought he was going to be on a trajectory of possibly an all-star caliber performer or a defensive player of the year type of guy. Now, all of a sudden, when you get to the, you know, where the stars start to shine the brightest here on the biggest stage, you're starting to see him kind of slink away from, you know, that prime time spot. 3.8 rebounds, not going to cut it. And when you start talking about getting physical and winning that game on the board, Serge Ibaka has to get more engaged.
Russell Westbrook was only 5 of 14 from the floor tonight. Was he forcing stuff, Lang, or was he just off?
I think he was just off. So here's the deal with the Oklahoma City Thunder. Kevin Durant is a very consistent performer. You can basically lock him in for 27 points, 7-8 rebounds, 3 or 4 assists. Russell Westbrook is that guy with tremendous upside. For some games, you'll get a 14-point, you know, kind of 10-11 assist game, and then the next night he'll run for 45 points and 18 assists. That's just the kind of player he is. And right now, the Oklahoma City Thunder just caught him on one of those nights. Still put up good numbers with 16-12 with 2 steals. And, you know, kept his turnovers down with only 3, but at the same time, it wasn't the type of performance that they need to overtake a team like the Warriors.
When you talk about Golden State, there's always the cast of characters we all know and love. But tonight, I thought Festus Ezeli with 14 minutes, with 12 points, that's the kind of stuff that I think Golden State can utilize, those maximum minutes of guys that are coming off the bench. What did you think of his contribution for the Warriors tonight?
Hey, listen, you talk about Festus Ezeli with 12 points in 14 minutes. I'm looking at a guy like Mo Space, who gives you 13 points
right
in 9 minutes. 13 points in 9 minutes, and we're talking about going back to Serge Ibaka, not to ride him too hard, but 3 points in 30 minutes, and he's a starter. I'm telling you, this is the kind of the depth. And when you're talking about the Golden State Warriors, that they provide Steve Kerr that luxury. The luxury to, you know, be very flexible with his lineup, to not panic when they get down in the stretch. He doesn't have to rely on a guy like Andrew Bogut, who was struggling a little bit early, turning the ball over, a little bit with his mobility. We know he's struggling with that thigh injury. Turn to the big man, Festus Ezeli, most space off the bench, combining for 25 points in only 23 minutes combined for both of them. That is huge.
Langreen, basketballinsiders.com on the NBA playoffs. Let's go to the East. I don't know what to say about the East, Lang. It's a, I mean, if Cleveland doesn't win this in at least five, I don't know what to say. Listen, this is a Cavaliers team that is rested. This is a LeBron James team that doesn't, where he doesn't have to have much mileage. What is it about? Now, tell me how dangerous the Cavaliers are right now.
The Cavaliers are very dangerous, but you have to wonder if they're going to be too dangerous and peak too soon before you get to the finals. Because make no mistake about it, they're basically running roughshod throughout the East. But when they get to the finals, they're going to have to step their game up, adjust their pace, and get those sea legs back under them to play at a very elite team, whether that's Golden State, whether that's Oklahoma City. Those two teams are not going to bow down like the Detroit Pistons did, sweep. Like the Atlanta Hawks did, sweep. And like the Toronto Raptors may be on their way, too, after getting thumped by about 30 points. I'm telling you, you know, Cleveland is very dangerous, but at the same time, you would hope that Toronto at least was able to challenge them a little bit. But right now, Cleveland looks like they're on cruise control.
You know, we see really good players and on good teams in the playoffs, especially late. And a lot of these guys come in and they go, this is who we are, this is what we are, and we're going to play this way and you're going to have to beat us. With LeBron, how is his basketball IQ? And what I mean by that is, does he watch Golden State and Oklahoma City and say, okay, I can see where your weaknesses are, I can see where our strengths are, and I'll orchestrate this team so that we can take advantage of that?
There's no doubt about it. I think LeBron James, he's a student of the game. And I think he's one of the guys in the league. And I know a lot of old timers talk about how the young guys don't respect the game, but I think LeBron James respects the game, respects the essence of the game. I totally think he's sitting down there on his tablet with his league pass, watching the Warrior, trying to dissect him, trying to find some type of weakness. And make no mistake about it, you can hear him on a court telling Kyrie, go. When Kyrie's isolated on the block, you can see him basically willing Kyrie Irving to take over games, to become a dominant scorer, to become that lead guy. And I think that is part of LeBron James' plan as the captain of that team, and it's still the best player on that team. He's empowering the other guys around him to look great, get their confidence up, and when they do have to meet that demon in the finals, because I think it's still going to be the Golden State Warriors, Tony. But when he has to meet that demon and stare that demon straight in the eye, at least his guys will be ready for war. Because you have to remember, Kyrie basically and Kevin Love really didn't get any finals action last year. So this is going to be a big test for them if they get back.
All right, Lang, final question. I want to ask you about the Eastern Conference, because I have been ripping it apart pretty much the start of the playoffs. I don't know how long the Cavaliers will be together as a core and how long they'll dominate the conference. I'm expecting a couple of years. Is there anybody in the East in the future? Do you see any team that can challenge them, that can be a thorn in their side? It's fun in the West, but it's so boring in the East.
Yeah, I think you know, like you said, there's a couple of years there. LeBron James is going to get a little bit older. His game's going to slip just naturally. You have to wonder how many years left he can play 75 plus games in 36 plus minutes. I'm looking at a team like the Boston Celtics. I mean, it's a team that sniffed 50 wins. They made the playoffs last year. People thought it was a couple years ahead of schedule. They repeated this year in the playoffs, and even though they took an L to the Atlanta Hawks in the first round, you still have someone like Isaiah Thomas, who's developed into an all-star. The team has loads and loads and loads of salary cap space this year to be a free agency player and have the number 3 pick in the draft this year, so they could possibly get a prospect that's ready to contribute right out of the cereal box. I'm looking at a team like Boston because Danny Ainge has done a great job after he lost the big 3, Rondo and Doc Rivers, really getting that team back in shape. And they will, make no mistake about it, within the next 2 to 3 years, really be a thorn in anyone who's sitting in that top spot side.
Langreen, basketballinsiders.com. Always great stuff, my friend. Thank you so much for your time, as always.
My man, Tony, thanks for having me.
All right, coming up next, we're going to turn our attention to some football. How many games do you think your team is going to win? Well, the odds are out, and we'll give them to you next. 800-777-2907, 800-777-2907. Plus, coming up, we've got college football news that, yes, disturbing, but let's see if we can break that down. Pete Futek joins us next hour, Yahoo Sports Radio.
Tony D on the Third Shift.
It's Tony D with you
on Yahoo Sports Radio and yahoosportsradio.com.
love Lang Green. He's always energetic. Basketball Insiders is the website. Talking a little NBA hoops. God, I'm telling you, I'm now in. I was on the fence. I'll be honest with you. These NBA playoffs were just driving me crazy. But I'm in on the West. The East, just get it over with. But
now, would it surprise you at all if Golden State just runs this out and just beats them by 20 every game?
Yeah,
runs off four straight?
Yes. I would. I would be surprised a little bit. Not a lot. Like, I'm not going to sit there and go, this is shock the world thing. But I do expect the Thunder to bounce back and at least win a game in Oklahoma City.
Here's my thing with, you know, watching how Russell Westbrook struggled tonight, or last night, however you want to say it. He also struggled for majority of the first game as well, and then had a monstrous, you know, probably 18 minutes or so.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
So that's what's kind of worrying me for the Thunder, is the fact that I don't know what the Warriors are doing, and if it's a lot of Clay or just kind of how they're mixing guys off and on them, that it's kind of disrupting what he's doing. But he's not there like he has been in the Spurs series and the series before.
I will say the one thing about this game tonight that kind of made me take a step back for a second is that after game one, there was a lot of conversation about, okay, and I know I did it on this show. Hey, Russell Westbrook is not scared of Curry. This Oklahoma City team is not, they're not scared of the Warriors. They've got size. Billy Donovan is not going to go small. They can win this series if they continue to out-rebound. At the end of this series, you had to take a step back and go, hey, look, the Warriors out-rebounded the Thunder. Curry was phenomenal. Westbrook couldn't control him. And there was nothing that went right in game one that they used in game two. They were completely obliterated late in that. Remember, you know, early in the game, if you watch the broadcast, the guys even made a point of this. The Golden State Warriors came out and used the energy of the moment to run out to a lead. And they had a double-digit lead early in the game. But the Thunder came back. And there was a lot of credit to the Thunder for staying with this and hanging on to this and getting through the initial first punch. With about a minute to go, plus or minus, the Thunder were actually up in the game. They were up by one. In a blink of an eye, they were down by eight. It was that fast.
That's the crazy thing about the Warriors that's fun to watch.
It is unreal quick they turn a game. You can't get up to do anything. If you get up if you're watching the game and you think, all right, we're in the final minute, I'm going to run and grab something to eat real quick, and I'll come back, and you know, maybe I'll use the restroom, or you're going to miss the turning point of the game. You better be careful, because you're going to miss the turning point of the game. Because at that moment, the Thunder went, oh, you got to be kidding. Like, we could have went into the locker room either up by two or three or down by two or three. That's kind of the expectation. We're in the final minute. They'll get a bucket. We'll get a bucket. But in the end, where we are right now, plus or minus a couple points. They were down by 8 points after being up by one in about a minute of basketball. It was insane. And then to see Steph Curry pouring on. The thing about it was, he wasn't playing the Sixers. I mean, he was playing the Oklahoma City Thunder, and he still did that. But yeah, if we get back together after my vacation and we're talking about a finals and includes the Warriors and the Cavaliers, and the Warriors did get through and win in five games, I would say, yeah, I'm disappointed in the Thunder. I don't expect the Thunder to get rolled over in the next four. I expect them to fight back at home. I expect them to hold at least one game in home court. But I wouldn't think it was a mind-boggling shock. All right. If you follow this kind of thing, and I don't know if some of you do, Bovada has released their win totals for the NFL teams. This is where you bet the over and under on the win total. Now, I have to preface this by saying that these will move based on how much wagering will occur, plus or minus, but these are at least the initial kind of fun guidelines. Take this for what you will, but I thought that this was fun. There are five teams Bovada has at 10.5 wins this season. Again, plus or minus. They are the Panthers, the Packers, the Patriots, the Steelers, and the Seahawks. I don't know. I think that all of them are pretty good bets to go over. I'm a little nervous about the Steelers, and here's why. I like the Steelers, but as a fan, I will tell you the thing that always has perplexed me about Pittsburgh is they will lose games they should not lose. And sometimes you end up with a 9-7 record. Good team and a 9-7 record. The teams that are are on the bottom of this list, Cleveland at 4.5. Take the over and under on Cleveland.
4.5.
4.5. With RG3, 4.5. Wow. New quarterback, RG3, 4.5. They could start a rookie and win 4 games.
Yeah.
They could have a rookie and squeeze out 4 games. RG3, an experienced quarterback, although coming off, injuries and problems and all that, still 4.5. You have teams that don't even know who their quarterback is going to be that have a higher win total than that. The Titans at 5.5. I'm not buying the Titans yet. I will in a year or so. I would take the under. 49ers at 5.5. Chip Kelly, Colin Kaepernick coming together, trying to work out the differences. The Niners at 5.5. I don't know. If I was gambling, I'd probably take the over on that just to see. Just to see. Chargers at 7.
Ooh.
I thought the Chargers could win the division. Change some things up. Eagles at 7, Saints at 7, Dolphins at 7. Dolphins at 7 under Adam Gase. Buccaneers at 7.5, Rams in L.A., 7.5. Our team, the Jacksonville Jaguars, 7.5.
I like that. I would take the over.
I'll take the over on the Jags. I will totally take the over. Texans at 8.5, Broncos at 9. Oh, Broncos at 9. That's an interesting bet right there. Cowboys are 9.5, Cardinals 9.5. Bengals 9.5. Those are just some of the teams. That's just for fun and games. I'm Tony D, Yahoo Sports Radio.